Hello, you're listening to the This Is The Way Phase 4 podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lascalzo. Today's discussion is about the third episode of Hawkeye, available for streaming on Disney Plus on the 1st of December, 2021. Any content Marvel Studios has released as of today's podcast is fair game for discussion, so consider this your only spoiler warning. There is a giveaway going on right now. You can listen to our past podcasts for rules for entry, but you'll need a Twitter account and know how to use it. Ours is the same as our Instagram handle, @thewayphase4. You'll also need to send us an email. Our address is thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com. You can also visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/thewayphase4.
Now tell me this. If I send an email, where would I put the stamp?
Instead of feedback, I want to pass along something that took place on our Star Wars podcast's Twitter account. As soon as we get a chance, we'll share it on This Is The Way podcast as well. But my next item on the schedule is a Vision podcast, and then next week our last news update of the year with coverage on the Book of Boba Fett beginning in late December. So what happened was this. I replied to a podcast post that appeared to show cufflinks.com products related to the Bring Home the Bounty campaign. The podcast lamented how some of the products they had seen were no longer being offered at Black Friday prices. If you're a repeat listener to our podcast, you know we have a coupon code courtesy of cufflinks.com, THEWAY15. It gets you 15% off site-wide. My reply pointed out that we have a code, but also that Screen Crush likewise has a code. And it just so happens that for the time being, it offers a bigger discount. Ryan Airy replied that yes, indeed, his outlet, Screen Crush, has a code. But kindly, he suggested the podcast use ours, not to step on toes. We appreciate that. I'm honored someone with the thousands of views that his YouTube channel gets for each video would take time not just to respond, but be gracious. But I want to let the listener, you, get the best deal possible. So whether you use the Screen Crush code or ours, please know we appreciate you either way. If you're going to listen to my podcast, I prefer you get the best deal you can. Stretch your holiday dollars just a little bit further, whether it ends up being another gift for another loved one, or maybe you're more charitable. If the company is offering you a way to enjoy their art for less, please do the best thing for you.
Why are you making it so tough on us, bro?
Hello, I'm Steve Lascalzo for Cufflinks.com. December is a month of giving, whether it's your time, charity, or gifts to loved ones. If you need ideas to close out 2021 with some class, try visiting Cufflinks.com. There, you'll find a small, family-run business with over 3,000 accessories available from the biggest brands and fandoms. Cufflinks, yes, of course. But you can find ties, tie bars, lapel pins, shirt studs, socks, and much, much more. The Marvel offerings will amaze you. Iron Man, Captain America, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, Black Panther, Deadpool, Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers, Thor, Spider-Man, X-Men. You can choose bright, colorful accessories or wear something so subtle even Hawkeye would have to look twice to notice. You don't have to have the need for cufflinks to appreciate the quality, and you just might find yourself considering that bow tie or deciding between gift sets when you take a look at the items. There's more than Marvel, DC, Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, sports leagues like MLB, NFL, NHL, collegiate offerings, and of course Star Wars. In fact, just like our Star Wars themed podcast, we can offer you 15% off your purchase. You just have to enter THEWAY15 in the coupon code box at checkout. You don't need to bid against Armand and Jack at a secret black market auction. You can dazzle a crime kingpin or take the focus off your 10 rings of power. You can look marvelous while wearing Marvel. Cufflinks.com has you covered no matter which universe you call home. Check out Cufflinks.com today.
We got you now, bro.
Episode 3 is titled Echoes. The full description on Disney Plus for the episode: after narrowly escaping the tracksuits and their daunting leader, Maya Lopez, Clint and Kate work together to find answers. With each step they take, however, they find themselves sliding deeper into a rapidly growing criminal conspiracy. The brief description: after escaping a new threat, Clint and Kate join forces against an expanding criminal conspiracy. The director for episode 3 is a team, Bert and Bertie. And if you just heard what sounded like Bert and Ernie, I don't blame you. Amber Templemore Finlayson, known as Bert, and Katie Elwood, known as Bertie, are British film and television directors, best known for directing the film Troop Zero, although I haven't seen it. I read that they're going to be directing the next 2 episodes as well, with Rhys Thomas back to direct the season finale. There is another previously on segment, as with episode 2, and it's there if you want to watch it, but I'm not going to review it. The writing credits on this one go to Katie Mathewson and Tanner Bean. And the runtime says 44 minutes, making it the shortest of the 3 so far, but I don't factor in credits, unless they come between a cold open and the body of the show, of course. I look for the first new action in the show, and then go until the screen cuts to black before the end credits. Episode 3, then, has just over 36 minutes of entertainment. That's not a good sign for a 6-episode show. It does mean, though, that I've got less notes to take, which is something I do like, because I have to do a lot to prepare for a podcast.
Come on!
The first 6.25 minutes is spent on the character that we ended up meeting at the end of episode 2. On Disney Plus Day, a series was announced that would follow Maya Lopez, a deaf, prosthetic-legged hero from the comics, and it's going to bear her name, Echo. Because she's being introduced here in Hawkeye, she gets a large part of her origin story here. We first see her in elementary school. We're told through video and audio she's deaf. We also see that she's not struggling too hard. She's very observant, a very underrated skill if you ask me, but that's not all, as we find out she can replicate the actions others take after watching for only a very brief time. The silence played from her perspective and the subtitles tell us about her handicap, but reading her teacher's lips and her paper tell how it's not really holding her back. Her writing worksheet has words like kick and leap and fast as a dragon, but she also correctly spells capoeira, a Brazilian dance fighting technique that I think we see her use later. We see that she's a loner, liking solitaire, but her other favorite game of I Spy.
That's a little on the nose, don't you think?
The scene shifts from her classroom to her bedroom, where her father is explaining some things to her about why she's not in a deaf school and about dragons and about her challenges that she'll face in life, and he's compassionate to her, but also honest in a roundabout fatherly way. The interesting part to me is that this flashback is set in 2007, which is before the events of the Battle of New York, so her father's mention about dragons coming from another world is kind of true, and I've not seen Shang-Chi yet. I want to wait until I have time to review it properly, but I know there are beasts in there that look like dragons at the very least. But also, the flying behemoths we saw in the Battle of New York, commanded by the Chitauri, certainly could be considered dragons of a sort, and even if they aren't dragons, in Maya's eyes, they would end up being dragons, right? I was trying to think about whether I should really analyze everything in every scene, like the toys in Maya's room, the wallpaper, the shadow puppetry, your father's sign language. I just want to treat this as a setup for the real focus of the show, or at least what I believe is going to be. Her father describes her goal as jumping between worlds. On the surface, it would be between the world of the able-bodied and the handicapped, but also, it means more because we find out she's also the daughter of a crime capo, so she might have to jump between the worlds of crime and herodom. There can be many ways it can be interpreted. His response to her question on how she would do that is that she should watch. Her observational skills are on display immediately in the next scene at a karate dojo. She's watching who, according to the credits, might actually be the young version of Kazi, fighting against a bigger and stronger opponent. Maya watches and sees that the opponent's trick is to use his feet to gain leverage and then more easily push down his opponent. We don't see her immediately put that information to use. She instead has another scene with her dad, who's wearing a tracksuit, by the way, who tells her to be good, use her speed, and that uncle will take her home after class. Who is uncle? Based on the laugh that the person gives, because we don't see his face, we just see his hand, I'm saying this is Vincent D'Onofrio. Here's where the tiniest speculation is needed, because he hasn't been announced in the cast, and I've checked his Twitter several times, and he's being coy about it. But Marvel is not the absolute best at keeping secrets either. Being Vincent D'Onofrio would be fine because he's a good actor. I listened to him on Law & Order Criminal Intent for years. I remember him in Adventures in Babysitting long before I ever saw Full Metal Jacket. And, you know, that laugh is very familiar. I've never seen a frame of the Netflix Daredevil show. I do know he plays Wilson Fisk, though. I think it's safe to say that Kingpin is coming over from the Netflix Marvel canon to straight up Marvel canon, especially since just recently Charlie Cox, who plays Matt Murdock, Daredevil, was announced as joining the full MCU canon.
Maya, you're up.
We then see the result of her photodidactic recall because she uses her speed and agility just as her father told her, and she easily counters the opening move of the bigger, stronger opponent, and she pushes him to the mat with no trouble, and we see her triumphant with her prosthetic leg. And then cuts to Maya as we saw her at the end of the last episode, an adult, much larger prosthetic now, but she's using her observational skills and her speed to take down her opponent still. This time she's in a gym boxing ring. It's apparently in Illinois. It's a short scene simply to set up that she's grown because we see her drive to Fat Man's auto repair on a motorcycle. She dismounts, then she senses that something's not right. She sees through the window someone cutting through her dad's tracksuit wearing henchmen. It appears to be, for us, the viewer, Ronan, and I say that only because we never see his face. We don't see Clint, but we do see the outfit cutting through people. Now, it would fit. If this was during the blip, as it's called, Clint was probably cutting down crime syndicates, and if Maya's dad was a capo for the tracksuit mafia, then yep, they'd be in danger. Maya puts herself in great danger, rushing in when she sees her father getting cut down. She doesn't chase after Ronan, though, who jumps through a window to escape. She stays with her dad. He tells her he's already gone, and to fly away, little dragon. And listen, it's not the most well-acted scene. Lots of fake tears, but hey, I'm a father of two girls, so he puts his hand to her face as he's dying, and yes, poorly acted, but that Ben Solo hand to the face from Han Solo moment still rang as an emotional moment for me. And last week, while I was watching Screen Crush after I finished my episode 2 podcast, I saw an image of Maya from the comics with a handprint on her face. And that, I guess it was as Echo. And her father's bloody handprint on her face was turned into like a white face paint thing. So that seems to definitely be a callback to that.
I love it.
Where's your arrows now? It's strong Hawkeye riding Brony.
The flashback ends with a title slate, and then it shifts to an abandoned KB toy store. And for me, the scene really takes all the teeth out of the tracksuits, and even by extension, Maya. Clint and Kate don't feel scared, and neither should we, the audience, really. The tracksuits have their captives taped to coin-operated kitty rides, and apparently, they've been riding on them since last night. I was thinking about this. It's now morning, and with 3 more episodes after this, it probably means 3 more days until Christmas. Depending on whether the show plans on Clint missing most of the day, or being there Christmas Eve so he could spend the whole Christmas day with his family, it could mean we're at December 22nd right now. I think based on where this leaves off, we may see 2 episodes take place in the same day, even though there were 6 days in the first episode until Christmas. This might be the first of 2 in the same day like that. The tracksuits are still waiting for Maya to come and confront them, and Kazi doesn't appear to be nearby. Instead, it's the big guy Ivan ordering people around. Kate tries to make her case to Clint that he's better off that she's there, but he counters with explaining to her that he was about to clear her name, and then he could have gone home. Thomas, or Tomas, the tracksuit guy, comes to Kate then for girl advice. He's the one that brought his girlfriend the early Christmas Imagine Dragons tickets, only to find out that she wanted to bring her sister. Kate is sincere with her advice, and really, if this wasn't based on a comic book, I'd say it feels like it's based on a comic book. It was really kind of cheesy dialogue. They're not even villains, really. They don't feel threatening. But maybe that's by design here. Tomas goes to run to get a pen to write down the advice Kate's dishing out, and she's proud. She keeps telling Clint how important communication is, a little trust, you know. I guess it fits. She's upset with her mother, right, for the lack of communication about her engagement, and also Clint's problem is about to become how he communicates with Kate. Then, though, Ivan's tired of the talking, and the shift from humor to trying to create a menace out of the tracksuits, again, it's abrupt.
Maybe I rip out your throat, Or maybe she will.
Maya descends the stairs, and Kazi is at the bottom and flanks her as she approaches. Kate asks Clint who she is, and he turns to her. When he does, his hearing aid becomes visible to Maya. She approaches and undoes Clint's hands and starts signing to him. He gives pretty simple answers and even points out that he's hard of hearing, not deaf. This seems to upset her as a deaf person. Not that he's hard of hearing, but she's looking down at this guy who knows only basic American Sign Language. So Kazi ties him up again, this time hands behind, and then he starts interpreting for Maya. Maya wants to know what Clint Barton's doing here. Clint is defiant and literal, saying riding a unicorn. Kate offers the cooperative and figurative answer, learning about trust. Maya then mentions that he's too reliant on his hearing aid. It's almost like at first she saw it, was shocked, and thought, hey, maybe he's a kindred spirit. And then immediately she's disgusted by how little he respected the more pure communication, at least to her, of ASL. Clint is all business, though, bringing up the Ronin suit, pointing out that Kate had no idea what it meant to put it on, offering an insult to Maya to attempt to rebridge that gap that he broke.
She's not Ronin. Look at her, she's 9. And spoiled rotten.
Kazi interprets for Maya, pointing out that Kate beat up some of her men that night, came running when Clint was in trouble, and that even if she isn't Ronin, it doesn't mean that Ronin isn't back. Maya wants Ronin for revenge. She doesn't know who it is, but she hasn't considered that, like her tracksuit-wearing henchman, maybe Ronin is a suit worn by many. Clint says the return is a rumor, though, and he knows because Ronin is dead. Now, we, the audience, know that Clint isn't dead and he's Ronin, right? Well, first of all, the person he was as Ronin could be considered dead. He's a new man again with his family. Second, what if there was a different Ronin and Clint killed that Ronin, then assumed his identity? Third, no one but Clint in the room knows that he was Ronin. He wisely deflects, and then an interesting directing choice shifts our point of view, or rather our field of audio. When Maya asked him who got Ronin, we see Clint mouth Natasha Romanoff. Kazi signs, and the subtitles tell us Black Widow. Again, you could make a case that Natasha killed Ronin by bringing Clint back from the edge. Maya points out the convenience of Ronin and the person who killed him both being dead. Clint offers that he was there, a witness to it. Attention's turned to Kate. She's asked about the suit, but again, field of audio cuts out. We only see her lips moving. Clint is trying to cut himself free while this is happening. Kate's trying to use some nice prose to explain herself. She likes to talk her way out of things. Maya starts imagining Kate as the one who killed her father and starts to choke her. Kazi has to step in to stop her from killing her. Clint then takes the distraction as a chance to calm Kate down, tell her she's going to be fine, they're going to be fine, and she's going to harness her overconfidence.
You got to harness that overconfidence of yours, okay? It's ridiculous overconfidence. You remember that one? Okay.
He tells her to wait for his signal, frees himself, and takes off into the abandoned store. The tracksuits pull their guns. Kazi tells them to take him alive, even though they're shooting at him. Clint does well in evading them, but Maya catches up, attacks him, and Clint is doing his best, barely hanging on. He grabs a hockey stick as a weapon, then swings it at her, and it's broken apart by her prosthetic leg. The next thing Clint knows, he's getting kicked in the head and his hearing aid comes free. Maya sees it on the floor and crushes it. Clint manages to get to his feet and, after absorbing another punch, runs to a trampoline, goes through a window, picks up his arrows and his bow, which he readies as we've seen him do in an Avengers movie before, his little shake move where he shakes it down and it like activates. Kate is busy trying to bite her way out of her tape, but Kazi draws a gun, tells her, "You're not going anywhere." Well, we know she is, though, right? Maya continues to fight Clint, and for the first time, now that he has his bow, he seems to have a temporary advantage over Maya, who hasn't seen anyone fight with one yet. He creates a little distance, and then I'm not sure what he does. Maybe he crosses the arrows in front of her so her head and neck are pinned to the wall, but he shoots two at her, uses those two against her, then seeing two tracksuits come up the stairs, jumps over a railing to a ball pit below. On the way down, we see him sideways in the air, takes aim and fires an arrow at Kate's restraints. The arrow narrowly misses, maybe even grazes Kazi's cheek. It hits the mark, and Kate's freed. Clint lands. Kate takes down Kazi. Then Clint goes under the wall pit surface, emerges as two tracksuits reach the wall of the pit. He stabs him in the feet with arrows. Then he pops out, fires an arrow at a tracksuit with a drawn weapon, and seemingly hits the weapon. Kazi apparently recovered because he's again fighting Kate, and then it appears Clint goes from non-lethal to lethal. So he hits a tracksuit right in the chest, it looks like, with an arrow, then hits one in the upper back, and then goes through another's hand with a no-look behind-the-back arrow shot. I think we saw him do that in Avengers. Kate continues to fight tracksuits, with Kazi finally getting taken down by Clint with a swipe from his bow. On their way out the door, Clint picks up his smashed hearing aid, and he is shouting, of course, because he's hard of hearing now.
We need a car.
Oh, can we take this one? Man, this thing's beautiful.
Clint passes up a 72 Challenger, but neglects the other vehicles in the lot and picks an older car. And when I thought about it, I was thinking, why would he pick this old thing? And I thought, maybe it's easier to hotwire. He wants Kate to drive so he can shoot, but the tracksuits shoot at Kate, and their communication is lacking because Clint can't hear without his hearing aid. This begins a long car chase. We've seen it in the trailer. One of the shots is a really long take where the camera pans from the chasing tracksuits to Clint driving, then the tracksuits in pursuit, then to Kate climbing out the window to shoot arrows. It's a very complicated shot that I read was very difficult to do, but they did it practically. In the chase, we get the scenes from the trailers where Clint's sorting through the arrows for Kate to shoot. You see some of those trick arrows Clint claimed he didn't have. There's a putty arrow, exploding arrow, acid arrows, a multi-grabber arrow, I guess you'd call it, a suction cup or plunger arrow, and a smoke arrow. Kate recovers her bow from the Challenger when Maya pulls it up beside them on the bridge, and Tomas is trying to take shots. Clint grabbed his gun, Kate grabbed her bow, and then she fired a smoke arrow, which causes the Challenger to crash.
And the Challenger gets totaled anyway.
Kazi and Ivan's truck gets demolished by a giant arrow. It was made that way by Clint's Pymtec arrow hitting a high arcing arrow from Kate that he has her fire coming down onto the bridge. Clint runs to the Challenger to reclaim his plunger arrow, and Kate has to threaten the guys with a USB arrow, one that we've seen Clint use in Avengers when he was under mind control, and then I think he used it also in the What If show. She fires it, though, while Clint is retreating, and it just bounces off Ivan, and Tomas' reaction was like, that was a little funny, but I still feel like firing a USB arrow, tipped arrow at somebody is still going to hurt. It still probably would have knocked him back a little bit. Instead, Clint and Kate jump off the bridge. He fires a grappling hook. They swing to the top of a speeding subway car and make their escape.
Now I get the whole plunger arrow!
Kate and Clint make their way inside a car off screen and take a moment to rest. Kate's first thought is of the dog, which is odd unless she's owned a dog before, which is possible. She's mentioning how Peach's dog has been cooped up all day, but hard of hearing Clint thinks he's starting the conversation and gives Kate one of the highest compliments he could give her by telling her she's not wrong about being one of the world's greatest archers. She's almost speechless, but while she's working it out in words, he still can't hear, and he brings up walking the dog. Clint has viewed Kate as a liability, and perhaps she has been. When they get their way back to Aunt Moira's fortress, she's going to do something wonderful. So, Clint gets out of the shower, and he opens up the fridge, gets a bag of frozen veggies. The audio in the scene goes to muffled, right? The field of audio changes. Kate comes in, maybe from a supplies run, and she's talking to him, but he can't hear. He senses the vibrations of his phone, and it probably has his wife's number and his wife's picture on it when the phone call comes in, so he starts talking to who he thinks is Laura. He's trying to brush her off and get her to text so she doesn't worry that his hearing aid is broken, but Kate gets Clint's attention and writes him a message with a pen and pad. It's a little boy. Hawkeye realizes it's Nathaniel. Then relies completely on Kate for the rest of the scene. She translates the muffled sounds into writing for him, and he has to reassure his little boy he'll make it home for Christmas, not even sure of that himself. He realizes he may have to rely on Kate a little bit to keep his promises.
Thank you.
The tracksuits now have to abandon their center of operations in the old KB toy store. Kazi tells Maya they'll be moved out soon, but also that he wants to talk. He questions her on her motivation to hunt down Ronan because, as he puts it, they're supposed to keep a low profile and Uncle wouldn't like it. She wants revenge and wonders if he'd question her father if he was still in charge. Kazi says her dad always put the crew first, so he's telling the daughter what the father would do. She cuts him off. She asks him who is in charge.
You are.
She tells him to look into Clint Barton. Clint happens to be waiting with Kate on the stoop, a very New York thing to do. They're waiting for a doctor to arrive at her practice in Chinatown so they can hire her to fix Clint's hearing aid. She agrees to a cash-only deal, and apparently she's very fast.
Is that all done?
That's because Kate and Clint are sharing a meal, and he's already got a fixed hearing aid. She starts by invoking her father, telling Clint how fearless he was. She idolizes him, because when she knew him, she didn't know all his faults. I'm not saying that he was a bad guy. He might be. But rather, she's got an image of him frozen in time in her mind. Kate feels like putting on the Ronin suit was the moment she became who she was supposed to be. Clint can relate. He remembers that day for him, but says it comes with a price.
Comes a lot of sacrifices, and some things you'll lose forever.
Kate doesn't immediately respond and seems to take the advice into consideration, but here is youth at the crossroads. Her optimism and overconfidence haven't yet been restrained by experience.
Look, there's also things you gain, like trick arrows and a cool costume.
And let's be honest, those are garbage answers to a guy who has fought and helped save so many people and seen what the cost is, right? Clint lowers his head and shakes it. Kate continues, though, with his branding issue and suggests he gets a better costume. She just doesn't get it. Clint counters with the fact that his job has been trying to go unrecognized. Kate draws up a suit idea that comic book fans, I guess, would see and recognize. Hawkeye in this incarnation hates it. Instead of purple, she suggests all black. Instead of a mask, she suggests a hood. I think this is to let us know that she knows Hawkeye was Ronan. She doesn't come out and tell him that. She suggests he can't say who it is because it's someone close to him. This kind of echoes Clint's playing with words about saying Ronan was dead and Black Widow killed him. Fitting for an episode called Echoes, right? Clint then gives three reasons why he wouldn't wear a flashy suit. First, he's supposed to go unnoticed, a ghost. Second, Laurel would divorce him. Third,
I'm not a role model. I'm sorry, Kate. I'm not a role model to anyone. Never have been.
Kate turns it around and points out that he stayed when others probably wouldn't, even at the cost of his family time. She points out that he came to the aid of a stranger, and even though she keeps screwing up, he's sticking around. Now that her mom is marrying Jack, who might have murdered Armand, and the tracksuits consider them both involved with Ronan, she says they're in this together, and Clint doesn't argue that. He picks up the check, tells her to name the dog, which she settles on pizza-related names, like Little Old Caesar or something like that, and she finally settles back on Pizza Dog. So he and Kate head outside, and then there's a walk and talk. It's really a chance for some exposition on the tracksuits. Clint doesn't elaborate completely, but pretty much explains the group started small, grew fast. Maya's not at the top. The guy that is somebody you don't want to mess with. He says Ronan hit a supplier, then upper management, and I'm guessing for the latter, he meant Maya's dad, though I'm sure he didn't know that. They take a car ride, and Clint's conversation turns to the motives of the group at the auction. Kate says she doesn't know about the watch. Maybe she didn't hear or didn't remember. She says she was focused on Armand and Jack. Clint is upset at the notion Avengers gear is floating around on the black market, and we know that they were after the watch, right? He considers Kate's comments on Jack for a moment, and Kate runs with it. She says there are too many coincidences, and she lists them off. And honestly, when she lays out the case, it seems weak. Maybe it's because she's the one laying it out. But Clint goes with her to her mom's penthouse because Kate suggests if they get into the company database, they'll find something on Jack. And the shot of the skylight when they come in and it pans down, it kind of echoes the shot from the first episode when the Battle of New York was going on, the intro, and she was a little girl, Kate was a little girl, and the world was crumbling down around her. At that time, Clint came to the rescue, right, with the Avengers. Now he's along for the ride. Okay, a little nitpicking here. Kate goes immediately to log in to Mom's computer before checking to make sure the house is empty. Not only that, but Clint seems impressed by this house. He hung around with Tony Stark, at least a little bit. So how is this really impressive to him? Then Clint suggests she looks up Kazi, but I guess we're supposed to accept that perhaps at some point he not only told her his full name, but how to spell it, because she types it in right on the first try. Sloan Limited comes up as his employer because apparently they are a client of Bishop Security. That doesn't necessarily mean a thing. I know that Clint says, hey, that, you know, sounds familiar. A fake front, though, could hire a legitimate cybersecurity team. We also learn here that Kate knows computers because she tries hacking into more files with some code, but she gets locked out. Then, another nitpick. The hard of hearing guy is the one who hears a noise. Maybe he's got his hearing aid turned up real, real, real high. Clint walks through the house, and then Jack draws the Ronin sword on him and holds it as his neck, ending the episode.
Don't move.
Couple thoughts. So Kate's going to miss her appointment with Detective Caudle, right? It was supposed to be today. It was supposed to be during this day. Now, that probably won't be much of a problem compared to what they're facing now, except we know there are 3 episodes left, and if Jack is the big bad, then the next 3 are going to be kind of boring, right? We see from the trailers that Eleanor has a conversation in the penthouse with Clint and Kate, where she calls them a team, or Kate does, and then he says, I wouldn't exactly call us that. I think we're going to find out, though, that Jack's not a bad guy, that he didn't kill Eleanor or Armand, and maybe he was even Ronin at one point. I think Eleanor might have had something to do with Armand's death. Clint asks Kate how Armand was killed right as he passed swords on the wall. Eleanor's wall. Now, I'm going to be fine admitting I'm wrong. Believe me. But what do you think? Email us at thisisthewayphase4@gmail.com or interact on Instagram or Twitter at thewayphase4 or on facebook.com/thewayphase4. Don't forget to enter our giveaways both here from this podcast and from our Star Wars themed one, This is the Way podcast. Listen to our past podcasts there on either channel to find out how to submit an entry correctly, because you do need to do it correctly. Episode 4 becomes available on Wednesday, December 8th, with only 3 episodes left. And this has been This is the Way Phase 4's discussion of Season 1, Episode 3 of Hawkeye. I'm Steve Lascalzo. Until next time, friends.